How you doing, everybody? I'm an alcoholic. My name's Steve Weber.
Wow. I'm impressed. Put that in writing.
Enjoy. I appreciate you inviting me down, Billy. You know, I left work Friday night, and, you know, it's a holiday weekend. Everybody's kind of asking everybody, you know, what are you doing for the holiday? You know, oh, man, I'm going here and I'm going there. And, you know, I told them I was going to be around friends because I couldn't really tell them I was going someplace I've never been before to meet some people I've never met to tell them something that I don't even know what the hell I'm going to say. You know, they wouldn't understand that, you know, but most of us do. You know, and that's the neat thing. That's, you know, the thing that's been on my mind, I guess for a long time now, well, at least the past 3 or 4 months, is the fellowship, and the fellowship of the Spirit that we talk about here. And, you know, cause when I got here, I had a light case of alcoholism. It was hardly worth mentioning. But I got here and, you know, I got here by weird circumstances. You know, I couldn't be alcoholic because let's face it, I never went to a rehab, never got a DWI. I was making a lot of money, had houses, cars, her, them, all the kids, all the stuff. You know, I had all the stuff out there. And, you know, I thought I was doing pretty good. I thought I was. You know, and it's kind of like standing up here. I don't know you guys, but I know you guys. You know, I understand that today, but I didn't when I got here. You know, I kind of got desperate one night. My sobriety date's Founders Day, 1991, and it's really wild. A couple of years ago, I got to speak on a Thursday night, and it was like, you know, it was like the 9th of June, and it was like about 9:30 at night, right about exactly 13 years from my last drink. And I sat there and almost cried because I could remember that night. You know, I don't know what your last night of drinking was like. Mine wasn't really pathetic. I don't even remember. I couldn't get drunk. I'm just sitting at my desk where I work, and I just... something happened to me, and I don't know why, but I just kind of pushed my chair back. I got down on my knees, and I said, just please help. I don't know what the hell's going on. I don't know what to do. Now, alcohol wasn't a problem, as far as I knew. You know, it took me a while sitting around here to realize that there's a lot of things I don't know that I'm gravely aware of that are right in front of me, you know. But... you know, for the first time in a long time, I just kind of put my head down on the desk and I went to sleep. 6:30 the next morning, the phone rang. It was a woman from the church I was going to, and she wanted to talk to me about my alcoholism. So we got together a little later on and we talked a little bit. And she invited me to go to AA. She talked about this meeting about a week later. And, you know... every day until I hit that AA meet, and every morning I'd say a little prayer. Just please, you know, I don't, if I'm an alcoholic, just help me not drink today. You know, just help me not drink. And I came to AA, and you know, the fellowship, like I say, has been really in my mind here lately. Plus the fellowship of the Spirit, and there's two different things. You know, the fellowship, when I first got here, I went to a meeting on Friday night, and there was a guy talking who I know real well today, but he started talking about all the things that happened to him after he got sober, like his wife getting murdered and something happening to his kid, and I'm going, God, how can you not drink when all those things go on in your life? I didn't understand that. You know, and I didn't understand why after the meeting everybody wanted to give me their phone numbers. And they made sure I had this little, up around D.C., it's almost a notebook. We got like, you know, 200,000 meetings every week on every corner of the streets. And they gave me one of these. And they told me to show up the next night on Saturday night at the speaker's meeting. And you know, I showed up, and here's a woman who hadn't had a drink in a year. And I hadn't seen her in a while, but she worked in a shop right across from my business, and I used to go over there at 7:30, 8 o'clock in the morning. And she was always drinking beer. And I knew she had a problem, so I wasn't surprised to see her, but I was amazed that she hadn't had a drink in a year. That scared me, because I figured she had a problem. But I still, you know, I came to AA for a long time, and I sat in the meetings, and, you know, after I had that talk with that woman, you know, I did something real stupid. I told my wife I might be alcoholic, my now ex-wife. I told her I might be alcoholic, and she's a blabbermouth. She went to work, and she told everybody down there, and some guy gave her a big book and sent it home. And suddenly he starts calling, and he had a couple of guys he sponsored call, and they'd call me every afternoon. And this guy kept telling me, he says, you know, you ought to show up at 7 o'clock in the morning at this meeting. And I'm going, well, you know, I'm pretty busy, I'm really important, and I got to be to work at 7 o'clock in the morning. He says, well, you know, give it a try, here's where it is. And after about the third or fourth day, I kind of got the impression he was going to be beating on my door at 6:30 in the morning to take me there, so I showed up. And you know, I was amazed. I walked into the Fellowship of the Spirit, and I didn't understand it, and I didn't know what it was about. But I knew that I was okay all of a sudden, because I'm sitting here amongst people who were just like me, and they weren't drinking. And most of them hadn't been drinking in 20 to 30, even one or two there, 35, 40 years. And I couldn't understand that. See, I still got this light case of alcoholism. And having this light case of alcoholism told me one thing, and it was real important. I'm going to come here for a while. I'm going to learn what this thing's about so that I can drink successfully. Not that I'm having a real problem or anything. But, you know, the longer I started hanging around, you know, and I told this old guy one day, I said, you know, I really do. I have a light case of alcoholism. And he laughed, and I didn't understand that. But, you know, about 2 years later, they pronounced me chronic, and I agreed with them. Because about a year and a half later, I could begin to see what I was like when I got here. You ever seen that book, Helter Skelter? I was on the cover. You know, I had this big, big, scary-looking beard and the long hair. And that early morning meeting, there were a couple of women there that wouldn't come within about 10 feet of me. I had a little bit of anger going on, just a tad, you know. And you know, I'd been coming to that meet for a couple of years, and this little old lady named Frances came up to me, and she just tapped my shoulder. She said, Steve, she said, I just want to let you know, you've come a long way. She says, when you first got here, I would not stay on the same side of the room with you because you were just a little bit off, just a little. You know, I had a lot of anger, and I was the kind of guy, and I couldn't understand that. It took me a long time to understand that coming to AA. It took me a lot of inventory, and it took a lot of making amends to understand that. But, you know, I kept coming to this meeting, and they nominated me the coffee maker after about 2 weeks. They said, you've been coming here for a couple of weeks. Here's the keys. You open at 6 so we can have coffee at 7. You know, in spite of how badly I made the coffee, in spite of the fact that when I didn't plug the darn thing in the right place and it was cold at 6:45 and I filled it with hot water and poured in the instant coffee, they still asked me to make coffee. I didn't understand that for a long time, you know. But I kept coming back to the meetings. And the old guys, they encouraged me. There was one guy that had one of his pigeons said, geez, he hadn't had a drink in about 9 months, and he encouraged me, just go across the street, drink some coffee with him, you know, get involved. So we would. We'd go across the street after this meeting. We'd sit there, tell lies, drink coffee, you know, eat breakfast, and my business wasn't doing what it was doing, and I wasn't taking a lot of part in it, so I'd sit over there until 10:30 in the morning. I'd go in, check my messages, see if I got any checks in the mail, and I'd go to another meeting at noon. And that's virtually what I did the first year I was sober. But I hung around with people constantly. There was always somebody I was going to a meeting with that night. I was always hanging around people. But about 3 weeks after I'd been sober, this guy with about 9 months, he said, man, let's go get a cup of coffee this morning. We ended up over at a hospital, and we're going in this detox ward. And I'm, what the hell are we doing here? And he said, well, he said, you know, just shut up and listen. Just sit down. You know, it was the first 12-step work I ever got involved in. He just kind of lugged me in there and told me, he says, this is what we do. You know, this guy ain't had a drink in hours, and he's vibrating. Let's just talk to him. And I didn't understand that. I hung around AA for 4 years, 2 months, and 12 days and got sick. I'm an alcoholic. You know, I came here and I sat here for a long time, and I thought I was a heavy drinker. I don't know if y'all know any heavy drinkers, but a heavy drinker, you know, he can stop drinking. Maybe, you know, he's the kind of guy that if she says last night's it, your ass is out of here. If anything like that happens again, he says, okay, I understand that, and that's it. It's all over with. She tells me that same thing. I go over in the corner with a bottle and think about it. I'm not like him. I'm not a heavy drinker. I thought I was for a long time, and I thought I could figure out how to drink. You know, that's why I came to a lot of meetings, because I figured I could learn how to do this thing like you guys, because you guys were obviously, something was different, because you quit drinking, and your lives got pretty good, or at least it looked like it on the outside, because I ain't had a drink, and I'm feeling a little irritable. You know, it's not that anything's wrong, but nothing's right. You know, and probably 5-6 years later, I heard a guy describing it, Don Pritz. I don't know if anybody knows him or not, but Don was a good friend. And that God, about 6 months ago, when I finally he raised his email address. He'd been dead for 2 years almost. I just sat there and cried, you know. But Don used to put it real simply. He says, you know, he says, I was never in the right place, doing the right thing with the right people at the right time. And that just stuck with me. Because that's what I was. I was always in, I don't know where the right place is, but I'm in the wrong place. I don't know who the right people are. But you ain't it. And it's always the wrong time, no matter what time it is. You know. And when you're walking around feeling like that, not drinking, life gets pretty miserable. Well, that's what happened to me, you know. Over the first 3 years that I was sober, I knew I was getting worse. I knew it, and people around me knew it, because they started walking away from me, holding back from me a little bit. But, you know, some of them. I even had the guy with 9 months who tried to help me and carried me across the street, and we drank coffee, and you know, there was a group of us, 5 or 6 of us. And, you know, when he relapsed at about a year and a half, I tried sponsoring him. And, you know, and 8 months later, he died because he was drinking too much Listerine. You know, I've constantly been pushed in front of people. The old guys at this meeting, you know, if you got any money here, take a couple bucks. Take that guy. He's homeless. I don't want to go close to him. Take across the street and buy him a cup of coffee and talk to him. Okay. I just did what I was told. Whether I liked it or not. And as people saw that I was getting worse, you know, they kind of look at me and say, you know, where do you live? And they all sit, they show up at the door that night, and suddenly we're going to a detox to take a meeting and stuff like that. It's just the way it was. The fellowship of the Spirit held on to me when I was getting worse. You know, I was enjoying the fellowship that anybody can come to. Anybody can bop in here and just kind of soak up something, you know. You can get an overeater come in here and get something out of this stuff. But a real alcoholic, you know. And that's the important question I had to answer, and I hadn't answered it. And I've been hanging around AA for a long time. 4 years, 2 months, and 12 days away from a drink. I'm sitting at a meeting at 7 o'clock in the morning, and I'm not feeling real spiritual because I got a gun in a car and I got 3 people I'm going to kill that morning. I'm not real spiritual that morning. There's no question about it, but I was real fortunate. I've been hanging around the fellowship long enough. I walked out of that meeting, and I walked smack dab in front of somebody, and she looked at me, and she says, it's finally happened. You've run out of power. Because during the meeting, this big cockroach crawled across the table. I took my shoe off, and I slammed it down on it, and everybody kind of looked at me, and I started talking. You know how we kind of talk when we're when we're kind of halfway out there not drinking, and just a tad bit of anger. And this woman, she says, you know, she says, you've run out of power. And I knew what she meant. I absolutely knew what she meant that morning. I had enough power, and I didn't even know it. I had enough power to stay not drinking on my own for 4 years, 2 months, and 12 days. That's as long as it was going to go, though. That's as long as it was going to go. You know, I knew for a fact. You know, that last night I was drinking. I got down on my knees, and I said, please help. I just don't know what to do, and I haven't had a drink since then. So I knew something had more powerful than me taking me away from booze. There's no question about that. Little problem, though. I was running the rest of my life, running the finances. I was running the houses. I'm running the business, the kids, the wife, all this stuff. You know, and they want the cars, and they want the house, and they want this, and they want that. All the stuff I was taking care of was not doing real well, but God was doing a great job of me not drinking. That's as good as it got, and that's all I needed. That's all I needed, you know. I found that the very worst of me is all I need when I come in here. The very absolute worst of me is all I need. I found that because when I was a couple of months sober, I'm sitting in this noon meeting, and I hadn't shared in any of these meetings, and I raised my hand, and I started talking, and I walked out of that meeting afterwards, and this old guy named Charlie, he kind of looked at me and cackled when I came up the steps, and he says, you're new, aren't you? I said, no, I've been here about 3 months. And he started laughing. He says, you really should take the cotton out of your mouth, out of your ears, and put it in your mouth, because you don't know shit. And he made me so mad. You know, everybody could tell I had a little anger problem when I was first here. He made me so mad, I made a commitment not to drink despite the son of a gun. The very worst of me was the only thing I had to deal with, that I could deal with, that I could use. You know, 4 years, 2 months, and 12 days away from a drink, I sat down with that woman and we went through the big book. We started on the cover with a circle and a triangle. And I found out this program's got three different parts. It's not just a fellowship. The fellowship's about the traditions. And, you know, it turned around to where I had to finally take the traditions and put them in the rest of my life. And the rest of my life got wonderful. But I had, you know, that circle and that triangle. The triangle's got three arms on it. And each one of those arms talks about service. Talks about the fellowship. And it talks about recovery. See, I can't be in one part of that triangle and expect to be whole. And she told me right off the bat, she says, look, she says, you're coming to the fellowship, but you're not getting anything else. She says, the big book is the steps. That's the second part. And then being a service is the third. Now being, you know, I'm not real bright, and everybody called it service position. Somebody showed up here tonight and made a cup of coffee, and they probably called it a service position, but that's not being a service. It can place me in a position to possibly be of service, but it's not being of service. It's not that third part of the triangle. Because my whole 4 years before this, man, I've always got some kind of service position someplace. I'm always doing something. Guys are throwing drunks in the car, and we're lugging them to meetings, and we're going here, and we're going there, and we're doing this, and making coffee, and we're doing everything we can. You know, the very worst of me can keep me not drinking for a short period of time. For me, it's 4 years, 2 months, and 12 days. Over the next 3 weeks, we went through the big book. We answered the questions, and we followed the directions. 3 weeks later, I'm through every amend that I can find, and I got a list, and I need to find some more of them. And I got two new guys I'm working with. And my life has never been the same since. It's been absolutely, absolutely, totally turned around. And it stayed that way for several years. You know, the surrender we had that I had the first night, the last night that I was drinking, that surrender I had was kind of short-lived. It lasted me over 4 years. You know, and I've come to find that we have several surrenders in sobriety, and that second one is 4 years, 2 months, and 12 days. That second surrender, when I had to surrender to the fellowship, and I had to surrender to Alcoholics Anonymous. surrendering to booze was really kind of easy. I felt pretty good. I came in here for 3 or 4 months. I felt pretty damn good. Physically, I felt great not getting up in the morning. And, you know, when I started going through the steps, I found out I was a real alcoholic. I didn't understand what a real alcoholic was. And it started dawning on me, you know, you take me away from booze a little while and I start getting memory back. And it suddenly dawned on me, for the last 5 years of my drinking, I quit drinking every morning. Standing in the shower. Man, last night was too much. I got to quit. So I'm going to quit. That's enough. I've had it. I've just had it. But something happened to me between 6 o'clock in the morning and 2 o'clock in the afternoon. By 2 o'clock in the afternoon, I suddenly realized it wasn't that bad. And besides, I'd only drank 2 beers. That's it. Just 2 beers, you know. If you've ever been in the car, when the cop walks up to the door, don't ever tell him you only had 2 beers. Because that's a signal for put your hands up, you're under arrest. That's just the way it is. I mean, that's what they teach them in the academy. But, you know, I began to look at me in this relationship I had with booze, in this bizarre relationship I had with booze. I started looking back at me and booze, and I looked back to when I was about 12 or 13, 14 years old. I don't know how long it was. My parents were up in Philly, and my parents are playing, they loved to play cards. They're playing cards with this couple that they knew, and these people were drinking this clear, icy cold stuff out of these V-shaped glasses with olives in it. And, you know, as the night went on, everything around that table got funnier. Now, I'm a little kid. I'm not in the right place. I'm not doing the right thing with the right people at the right time. I'm just totally out of place. And I'm watching this, and I said, you know what? They go to bed. I'm going to try that stuff out. And I did. It was gin. Never drank gin again. But that night, I drank just enough gin to feel like I was okay. Something happened to me. You see, I came to AA and I thought drinking was the problem. Drinking's not the problem. It's the only solution I ever had. Because that night, I went from being out of place, totally not knowing what's going on, to being okay where I was, doing what I was doing. It's the only solution I ever had. That's it. It's the only thing that ever took me far enough out of me to make me comfortable with you. Only solution I ever had. You know, when I was in my 20s, I could walk into a bar after working all day. And you know, if you're really good, you got the bartenders trained. They know when I come through the door, by the time I hit my chair over in the corner, there's a rusty nail sitting there. And rusty nails, just enough scotch and drambuie and 2 ice cubes, no more than 2. And it would be sitting there, and by the time I got there and started it, there would be another one appear. Then I was okay. I was absolutely okay. Had to be a heavy drinker. Let me sit around here long enough, I'll be okay. The only problem is, the longer I didn't drink, the worse I got. I found out that I suffer from this allergy. Once I start, I can't stop. Because as I started looking at it, you know, I always wanted to drink too. Absolutely. I was only going to drink 2. See, what would happen to me, I'd quit at 6 o'clock in the morning, 2 o'clock in the afternoon, and it suddenly dawned on me, I made a mistake this morning. I'll only drink 2. So 4 or 5 o'clock, I'd sit there and I'd have a couple, and by 6:30, I'm, I was only drinking beer by this time because scotch and rum made me homicidal and suicidal and stuff like that. And I was a cop then, and they didn't appreciate it. But I only drank beer. And I only drank beer for about 15 years. And I knew you couldn't be alcoholic just drinking beer. I mean, who in their right mind, you know, could be alcoholic drinking a case or 2 of beer every day? Nobody. You know. But that's happened. That happened to me every night. By 7 o'clock, I'm through a couple 6-packs, and I'm going, God, I got to get home. I missed dinner last night, and that started the whole ruckus, believe me. I got to get home. 1 more beer, and I'm going home. I've already had my 2. You know, and by 8 o'clock, I'm going, you know, God, I missed dinner again. Oh, she's going to be pissed. 1 more beer, and I'm getting out of here. You know, and 10:30, it's the same thing. God, the kids are in bed. man, this is going to be a replay of last night. One more beer and I'm going to get the hell out of here. And by 11 o'clock as well, maybe if I drink one or two more, I can get home and they'll be asleep and I won't have to listen to it. So I'd get in the house and I knew what to do. 6 o'clock the next morning, I'd get up, hop in the shower and quit drinking. Every time I quit, I got drunk. My last night drinking, I didn't quit. And I didn't know it. I didn't know every time I quit, I got drunk. Didn't have a clue. You know, as I was going through that first step, I really started looking at me and that really strange relationship that I had with alcohol. You know, and the first step doesn't even ask me if I'm an alcoholic. It asked me about a relationship I have with alcohol. Do I have power to drink what you want when you want to and quit when you want to? I always thought I did. I always intended just to drink two. In spite of the fact I never did. I always thought the third drink was my idea. I didn't know I had an allergy. I got this thing. Something's different about me. I don't know if you guys ever seen a heavy drinker? I was about three, four months sober. Had this guy I used to work around. His name was Steve, too. And we'd come down in this neck of the woods with fishing poles. And we'd leave on Friday afternoon, take off work early, pack as much beer into a couple of coolers as we could, and we'd come down here and fish and run around, raise hell, just have a ball all weekend. But I got sober. Well, I got not drinking about 3 months later, and I said, you know, he's an alcoholic too, so I need to go talk to him. Because they told me, you help somebody else. So I went back to him, and he quit working for me by then. He was doing something else. I said, Steve, you need some help. He said, what are you talking about? I said, well, you know, you drank like me. We did all this goofy stuff. We were drinking and carrying on. He says, you don't understand. He says, I'm real glad you quit drinking. He says, I was going nuts trying to keep up with you. He says, I don't have that kind of problem. He says, I'm really happy that you went to AEA and you're not drinking anymore. He says, but, you know, that's about the last time I saw him. I don't understand that. You know, but. You know, I started finding that, you know, I'm not, our book describes three different kinds of drinkers. They describe the guy that is just absolutely insane to me. It's the guy who comes in for happy hour. They call it happy hour because if you drink a drink, you feel a little happier. You know, he's the guy who comes in there and after two drinks or a drink and a half, I don't understand that either, he kind of pushes it back and says, no, she'll have dinner shortly, so I need to get home. I don't understand that. Two drinks gets me started. That's all it does. It gets me started. It makes me feel okay. Because when I walk in that joint, I'm not feeling okay. Once I feel okay, all of a sudden I think the third drink's my idea. I didn't understand that. I didn't understand I had this reaction that nobody else has. You know, and then there's the unmanageability, you know, and that's real simple. I just can't manage my life, then or now. I just can't manage it. That's all it is. I can't manage my life. If I could manage my life, and that's what I did, you see. I came to AA and I hadn't had a drink in a little while, and I began to manage my life for the first 4 years. And God was managing the booze, and I wasn't drinking. I was managing the rest of the stuff, and it was getting worse. So I had to become aware. I could just plain can't manage my life, you know. And I had a big problem in that second step, though. I knew there was God. It was me. You guys weren't listening to me. And that's why I was pissed. That's why I was so angry. You guys weren't listening to me. Give me 20 minutes, I'll explain what you need to do. All you got to do is follow through. It's real simple. It's real simple. When you take somebody like me who cannot stand, I couldn't stand authority. You know, I had to become authority. That's how bad it was. You know, and I'd love to tell you a whole mess of stuff about when I was in law enforcement and everything, but I'm a blackout drinker too, and I don't remember a hell of a lot of it. All I remember is a lot of it went real bad real quick, you know. Being a blackout drinker, you know, that just means a lot of people out there know a lot more about your life than you do. That's all it means. That's why making amends is pretty important to me. That's some of the most important stuff I've done is make amends. I found out more about my life making amends to people than anything else, because my memory is just not that good, you know. I mean, I got sober, but I was about a year and a half sober, and I knew I had an El Camino, and it was bright yellow, and I thought I bought it in like 69 or 70, and I had it through about 75, and as it turns out, I had two of them, and I didn't even remember the second one, and it was bright red. But I found a duplicate title sitting in the house that I bought it in like 72 or something. I didn't even remember it. All I knew is I had this one, you know. Not all of us are blackout drinkers, but I was, you know. And that was probably the best thing that could happen to me. Every once in a while I get a perk. I get a little something that kind of pops up. And, as we don't drink for a while, that's why I've had to go back and make some more amends as years have gone by. You know, I went through this step, this third step, and I had it backwards. I really did. I thought it said, I'm making a decision. Now, first of all, I had to find out that my intentions were never decisions. I'd always had a lot of intentions. I always intended on getting home. I always intended on doing this. I always intended on doing that. And I thought that's what a decision was. Took me writing a lot of inventory to find out I had a lot of intentions, but I never made any decisions. You know, and the thing about three frogs, have you guys ever hear of that? Three frogs sitting on a log, and one of them makes a decision to jump in. How many are on the log? There's still three. Step seven is where you hear the splash. That's the neat part, you know. And I had it backwards. I thought I would turn my life and my will over to the care of whatever this thing was. You know, best I could figure for that second step was I was not God, and that was drilled into my head. You just aren't it, okay? Just trust me, you're not it. As my sponsor at that time told me, he says, Steve, he says, let me explain it to you. He says, most people, when they're two, they're real self-centered, and they got a lot of things they want people to do for them. And they kind of beat on things with spoons and high chairs and stuff. And most people outgrow that by the time they're four. He says, you're 44 and you have a long way to go. Okay? You can't run the world. You can't run the world. You can't even try to run the world. But I wanted to, and I tried to. Okay? So the second step was real simple. You know, it's just not me. I don't know whoever it was. You know, just that whatever was keeping me sober those first 4 years, that's what it is. Then I thought, well, okay, this thing, it says I turn my life and my will over to this power. And I had it backwards. You know, because if I turn my life over and I retain my will, that means I believe there's some kind of power, and let me give you a list of how it should run. At least that's the way it was for me. And I got experience with that in my first 4 years of not drinking. Because I believed. I have no problem believing. But I had a problem because I kept following through with all the, you know, I thought God was Santa Claus. Just gimme, 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 gimme. Like 2-year-old. That's what Charlie told me. I had a long way to go. You know, wrote a lot of inventory. You know, you think that third step when you're writing inventory, it's real simple. You know, when we started going through this book and answering the questions, she told me she'd just take a piece of paper and put it in a page, read the left-hand side and read the right-hand side every night, anytime while you're thinking about this. You come across somebody you'd hate to sit across the table from, or you want to harm in any way, or you believe you've harmed, just put their name on a piece of paper. So I did. You know, by the time we got up to a certain place in the book, right after the third step, you know, the third step was real simple. You know, I loved the promises of the third step, and it kind of outlines the rest of the program for more me, because it says we get a new employer. If I get a new employer, that means I got a job to do. real simple. You know, I worked all my life. I know what an employee is supposed to be. He's the employer, I'm the employee. He's the director. I want to be the director, but I'm the actor. He directs, and I just run out and do. It's a lot of doing stuff. You know, he's the father, I'm the child. Had a lot of problems with that word there for a long time, but that's just the way it is. You know, once I made that decision, that's the decision I made. He's what he's going to be and what I'm going to be. You know, if he's the father and I'm the child, all the rest of y'all are children too, and I shouldn't treat you the way I've been treating you. And that kind of put a hold on a lot of the ways, a lot of the people I wanted to even talk to. And I found the best thing I could do is keep my mouth shut. And that was, for me, that's all I could do for a long, long time was keep my mouth shut. And, you know, so I wrote all three of those, and I found there was three inventories there in that four-step, not just one. You know, I wrote all three of those inventories, and I found the most important thing about this was the fact that there was five prayers in there. Five real important prayers, and I even use them today because they're real powerful. You know, all five of those prayers can guide me through a day. And it talks about everything I get involved in. You know, I came through that inventory and I shared it, and you know, there ain't nothing there that anybody else ain't ever but done. You know, the sixth step was real simple. It's only one paragraph in the book. Am I willing to allow him to do what I can't do? Simple stuff. Either yes or no. If you're not, keep running your life. If you are, come on, let's say this little prayer. You know. And that little prayer tells me, gives me the guides as to what I need to do. The third step prayer and the seventh step prayer both tell me just, well, help somebody. That's what they've been pushing me to do ever since I've been here. They've been pushing me in front of drunks, in front of people still kind of vibrating. Ever since I've been here, go do that. And I go, but I'm not helping anybody. And they look at me and they say, well, you ain't had a drink in how much time now? Yeah. Got 100% success rate with 12-step work. I haven't had a drink in almost 16 years. Not many of them have, but that's just the way it goes. You know, I made that list. You know, and that list was not real hard because I wrote about them all. Wrote about everybody. Four-step gives me my eight-step list, and all I have to do is become willing. And Don and a couple other people gave me some help with that. They said, you know, use 3x5 cards. Put the person's name, their address, their phone number, and what you did, what you think you did. See, I live under a lot of delusion, but I need to put down here what I did, what I think I did, what I'm sure I did. Being a blackout drinker, I'm not even sure of a lot of this stuff because when you're not in blackouts, you're in brownouts or grayouts or whatever. You know, in the right-hand corner of that card, put a plus or a minus. And a plus means I'm willing to make this amend. And I know where they are. And a minus means there ain't no way in hell. And I put them all in a pile. Plus is on top and the minus is on the bottom. And it's amazing. You start going through the pluses and the minuses become pluses. Real simple stuff, you know. I found out all my amends were about just a couple of different things. You know, I'm like a little 2-year-old, and I want what I want when I want it. And it's all about three things. Simple. I had to categorize them just real simply. I knew what I was doing. I knew how to do it, and I knew what you needed to do, too. Every amend that I ever made was about one of those three things. And all I had to do was go back and talk to people and tell them how I thought I hurt them and then ask them, what can I do? How can I fix this? How can I correct it? You know, one of the greatest ones was my now ex-wife who, you know, she cut me free. I mean, I had a lot of guilt and a lot of shame for all the stuff I did. You know, I sat there for half an hour, explained all the things I was guilty of and all the stuff I'd done. And I said, you know, I don't know what I can do to fix all this. Just tell me and I'll do it. And she looked at me and she went on for about an hour and talked about the things that I missed. And I sat there and I said, this is great because I need this because I don't know this. And then she told me what she wanted. You know, as soon as I got the divorce papers that were final, I'm free. I owe that woman nothing, absolutely nothing, and I try to stay away from her. Joanne and I saw her a couple years ago, and Joanne, I tell you in a heartbeat, I just kept my mouth shut. because all I got to do is smile, and baby, you know, she's into me like whatever. I don't know. But, you know, and that's what I do. I made a commitment to leave her alone. I made a commitment. She wanted me out of her life, and so I left. I had people out there that I made amends to who had no clue who the heck I was. But you know what? What I thought I did to them was eating me alive. I needed to approach these people and say, you know, here's the harm I think I caused you. What can I do to correct it? You know, and whether they said, just get the hell out of here, or who are you? What are you talking about? Whatever. I began to get a picture of myself sober as well as drunk. And I found that as I was running my life, drunk or sober, I was my own enemy. My troubles are my own making. You know, I'd love for it to be your problem. I had a guy on my 8-step list who would have had to come back to life and do something different. A dead guy. For me to be okay. Now, I mean, that's how nuts I was. And that guy was driving relationships with other people. He'd been dead since mid-70s. But he was driving relationships with other people. He'd been dead 25 years and was still affecting my life today with people. He doesn't anymore. You know. 10, 11, 12, they're a lot of fun. You know, the 10-step kind of asked me, he says, you know, what are you doing right now? Not what are you thinking right now? You know, I've been sober enough long enough to realize that it's about what I do, not what I think, you know, or how I feel. I don't know. A lot of our meetings up there, they're feeling meetings. You kind of go into and explain how good or bad your day was. And I went to a lot of those when in that first 4 years and drove me nuts because I agreed with all these people. And I thought that was a neat thing, but it was killing me, you know. Longer I've been sober, the more I realize in psychiatry, none of the ones I went to helped me. I victimized a couple of those, and you know, they didn't help me. And I didn't get anything out of it because I'm a liar. I'm a thief. I believe I got to take whatever I need. And I can't tell you the truth because if I tell you the truth, I'm in trouble. You know, so psychiatry didn't help me, so meetings like that don't work. They don't work for a guy like me. Didn't do me good to analyze how good or bad I feel today. And I found as the longer I'm sober, the more I realize it ain't about how I think or what I feel. It's about what I'm willing to do. You know, I'm willing to. My sponsor, he's kind of wacky. He has no sense of, geez. Gosh, how do I put this? I'm a real sensitive guy, and sometimes can't think of the words. He just has no compassion for how sensitive a person that I am, you know. And he kind of tells me things that kind of upset me a little bit. A couple months ago, a guy and I went up to Pennsylvania, and we met with him, and he looked at me. He says, "Steve, this 11-step." inventory you're doing every night. He said, "Now, how are you doing it?" He says, "How about if we do this?" He said, "Why don't you call me every morning when you get up or soon afterwards and just tell me what your 11-step inventory was from the night before?" And I tell you, I didn't realize how answering all 14 of those questions is going to cut me wide open. These last couple months have tore me up. It's gotten me thinking in another direction. You know, because I'm starting to realize that as I'm going through the day, I'm doing much better than I thought I did. But, man, let me tell you, when I'm bad, I'm bad. You know, I can go from a zero to a son of a bitch in about 2.8 seconds. But I've learned it doesn't do me any good, so I calm down pretty quick. But it's still there, you know. But answering those 14 questions to him on his answer machine every morning has opened me up to that fact. Then I could do something a little different. And my life has changed in the last couple of months. I started working with a lot more new guys. You know, there's nothing all through the very worst of my sobriety. At the very beginning, every time I turned around, there was a new guy sitting in front of me. I couldn't go to a meeting. I mean, when I was about 3.5 years sober, I tell you how bad it got. I mean, I'm feeling miserable. And I walked into this beginner's meeting, this good friend of mine who's stark raving nuts anyway. He and I really didn't get along. We had assigned seating in the early morning meeting. I sat on one side of the room and he sat on the other because we didn't jive real well. Okay. And they didn't like chairs flying in the meeting. So they assigned us seats. But he came in this meeting one night and he had this guy with this shirt. He was just as bright yellow as he could be. And this guy hadn't had a drink in probably an hour. And that smell just kind of flowed in the room with him. And he looked at me and he says, "Steve," he says, "I got this guy," he says, "and I want to sit with him for about 2 or 3, 4 days, whatever." He says, "Can you help me?" I said, "Hell yeah." You know, so I'd sit with him from 6 a.m. to 6 p.m. And he'd sit with him from 6 p.m. to 6 a.m. You know, something happened to me when I'm sitting there talking to this guy in this house. I'm about 3.5 years away from a drink. This house is so full of booze. I never had this much booze in all my life. This guy's got a lot of money and houses and cars. And I mean, just, you know, he couldn't drive the Ferrari anymore. He couldn't drive the boats anymore. But when you walked in the clothes closet, when you came through the front door, it was piled with cases of scotch. I mean, this is the kind of place it was. And I sat in this guy's house for 3 days, 12 hours long, telling him about me and this relationship I have with booze. And you know what? It never dawned on me that there was enough booze in there that they would miss a bottle. Never dawned on me. Here I am 3 years away from a drunk. I've really not ever done anything other than work with other people. And I was taken away from alcohol like I never knew. And it was years later before I even realized that. Yeah. Throughout my entire sobriety, working with other people has been the only thing. And our book's real specific. You know, if you got a problem with sex, you got a problem with her, you got a problem with this, you got a problem with that, find a new guy. You know, got some guys that we get together on Saturday morning. We talk about someplace in the big book. And we've got a commitment. I sponsor a guy who sponsors a few guys, and they sponsor a few guys. And it may be 3 of us here, and it might be 8 or 9 or 10 of us here. And we have a commitment as a group. We got a little group for them. It's called the Fellowship of the Spirit. We have a rehab commitment we go to once a month. You know, we got a guy that celebrated a year or a couple about a month ago. So we gave him a present. We went to this young people's meeting. We found a guy who was still kind of shaking, and we made sure he took him home. And he lugged him around for about 3 weeks. And this guy, all of a sudden, he's going, "You know what? This is wonderful stuff. I don't understand this." And suddenly, he's able to make his amends to somebody that he thought he could never make amends to. And he don't want to drink. And he's almost smiling now. And that's amazing. That's absolutely amazing. He hadn't had a drink in a year. And 3 months ago, he was just absolutely miserable because of the amends that he was going to have to make. Push him in front of a new guy. That's what they did to me. You know, I don't know if any of y'all are new or what. I know 8 months. My God, 8 months without a drink for a real alcoholic is a miracle. You know, I'd love to believe that I'm the miracle. But maybe the miracle happened a long, long time ago, and all I got to do is come in here and make a decision to participate. Maybe it happened when Dr. Bob, Dr. Bob didn't really want to talk to Bill. He was tired of people talking to him about his drinking, because everybody was talking to him about his drinking. And Bill's in town, and he's staying in the Mayflower, and he needs somebody to talk to. He's not real sure. He found Bob through some church people. Bill didn't sit down with Bob to get Bob sober. He sat down with him so that he could stay sober. And all he did, you know, Bob says 15 minutes, that's it. That's all you get, 15 minutes. 3.5 hours later, when they both walked out of there, Bob says, "You know, I've never been anybody who's just like me." All Bill did was tell him what was wrong with him. He didn't tell him what was wrong with Bob. "I don't have a clue what's wrong with you. I know what's wrong with me. I'm a real alcoholic. When I stopped drinking, I started thinking. And when I start thinking, I get a mess of decisions. I make decisions, and I got opinions, and I got judgments about the way the world ought to be. And I can look around this room, and I can decide the people that I don't need to listen to. And I'm slowly walking away from here. I sit and listen with my eyes closed in a lot of meetings today. And I try not to be judgmental. God, I try. You know, and I love speakers' meetings. You know, because the speakers' meetings are really great, because when I'm sitting in a meeting that's not a speakers' meeting, I'm kind of sitting there, and before it's my turn, you know, I got this thing running through my head that is what I'm going to tell you. And then after I share, I spend the next rest of the meeting remembering the stuff that I should have said that I'm perturbed about now. So I love speakers' meetings because I can sit there and I can relax and I can listen to somebody else. Man, you know, if they're just like me, I can relate to them, you know, because I'm a real alcoholic. I stop drinking. I get these judgments and opinions about the way things ought to be, and they don't quite work out real well all the time, you know. I come here on a regular basis. I work with some guys. You know, I do stuff like, you know, Billy called me up and said, come on down. You know, my big question is, what time is it and where? I don't have anything else I need to do. When and where? That's the fellowship of the Spirit. Those are the kind of people I hang around with today. You call them up and you say, hey, you know, how about going to the jail with me? And they said, well, let me get my calendar. Hold on. What night is it? What time is it? I don't have anything else. I'll be there. Where are we going to meet? 12-step work is what keeps me sober today. And the traditions. The traditions that allow me to live with you. When I first got sober, when I first got sober, they had the banners on the walls. You know, and I took the steps off the wall, and I had an off-the-wall program, so I had to get into the book. But they had the traditions up there. And I asked this old guy, I said, what is this junk? He says, Steve, he says, you don't understand it. You don't need to understand it. He says, just believe me when I tell you that all of those things make it okay for you to be whoever you want to be for as long as you want to. And when you get tired, we'll still be here. That's really all it means. And I got tired and they were still here. You know, Billy, I appreciate you inviting me down. I'm glad to meet most of you. And I've enjoyed it. Thanks a lot.